Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Being Unapologetically Authentic. My name is Jean Tian, and today we are joined by guest Alicia Wolf. Alicia is the founder of Goldfinch Wellness. She is passionate about helping people find the clarity and wisdom that already exists inside them. Alicia found her calling through her own therapy, as well as practices in meditation and Buddhist psychology. Join me as we learn more about Alicia in today's episode. So let's get started. Hey, Alicia, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so happy we were able to make this work and so grateful for your time. I know you're super busy. So let's get started. And if you can give our listeners, our community, a bit of background about yourself.
Sure. Yeah. My name is Alicia Wolf, and I'm the founder of Goldfinch Wellness. It's a psychotherapy and coaching practice, and I am based out of Baltimore, Maryland. And some of my background and training is in Buddhist psychology, and a lot of that really drives the way that I practice and the way that I work with folks.
That's amazing. And so I was reading through the bio that's on your website, and you had mentioned that you started off in social work as your mm-hmm. initial career. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if I read your bio correctly, it sounded as if while things were going well, it wasn't necessarily going well within, or maybe it wasn't as fulfilling as you had thought it would be. Could you share a little bit about that in your journey?
Yeah, absolutely. When I came to social work, I was really excited about it because I really cared about social justice. I really wanted to work individually with folks. And there's actually kind of two tracks for social work. There's a clinical track where you can become a therapist, and there is a community track where you become, you know, an organizer or somebody that works more in the community. And I was really sure that I wanted to do that community track. And so that's how I started out. And I worked in child welfare and adoption services for a little while. And it was exactly what I thought I wanted to do. When I went to school, I was like, I want to work at a nonprofit that supports children and families. And families that come together through foster care and adoption. And so I had, quote unquote, achieved exactly what I wanted. And it was really not feeling like the right fit for me, which really freaked me out because I had just really spent a lot of time and energy getting to this place. Right. And so, yeah, that was sort of the moment of pivot for me because I was feeling pretty stressed out, pretty mm-hmm. overwhelmed, and I wasn't feeling as passionate as I originally had about it.
Interesting. And then, so do you remember what the signs were that kind of called, like, that stood out to you that were a really good indication that the path that you were on wasn't necessarily like lighting you up?
Yeah. You know, I think that I, the biggest indicator for me was I became really pretty anxious. Mm. And I don't know that I'm a naturally anxious person. Now that I'm a clinician, I know a lot more about anxiety, but, it was something that I felt sometimes, but it wasn't really a daily occurrence for me. And when, I was in this other line of work, I felt very nervous and very anxious a lot of the time. And, I think it just felt like it wasn't exactly the right fit. And mm-hmm. And my body was kind of responding and telling me that this didn't feel right. And just the level of, there's a lot of pressure and there's a lot of scarcity in the nonprofit world of not having enough money and not having enough people to do the work that you want to do. And I was really taking that on. And I think I was really internalizing that. And so it found the passion that I had for the work was feeling a little bit diminished by how overwhelmed and how anxious I was feeling.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so that's a really great, you know, red flag, I'll call it, you know, red flag for anybody, right, who is in a similar situation, who is feeling basically that anxiety that they don't normally feel. And it kind of brings me back to my memories of when I gave myself insomnia because of all the anxiety that I was going through with the prior job too. I mean, these are things that really do happen. I think our mindset is such a key factor in terms of like our ability to process and our ability to truly stay present and enjoy life, right? That I don't think we realize how much of a part it plays.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, so often when people come to me and they're very unhappy, and specifically in their work, they say, I feel so anxious, I feel so unhappy. Mm. And so like, I need to change that. That's what they come to me with the request about, is I need to change how I view this job. I need to change how I'm feeling so that I can continue to stay in this job. Right. And we don't necessarily see that the anxiety that we're feeling, the insomnia that we're experiencing, is information. It's not like a hindrance of that we need to get past, but it's information that our body and our mind is trying to give us about how it feels for us to be in this particular job or in this particular experience.
And I love that perspective that you just shared, Alicia, because I think that so often we come to seek help because we think that we're the problem, right? And you know, the clients that come to you, and I know even in my own personal journey and my clients too, it's like, I'm the problem because I'm not happy here. Whereas like, we're told we're supposed to be happy. You make a good living, you have a steady job, you're supposed to be happy. So the fact that you're not happy is our own problem, but it's not, right? Like, you know, and that's such a good, that's like, it's like, like, you know, that aha moment. Like, it's not our problem. It's a message that we need to reevaluate. And I love that perspective that you just shared.
Yeah. Thank you. And I think that's really well said. And I think that sometimes when we're in environments where we are feeling anxious and that kind of thing, we're not feeling successful. We're not trusting ourselves as much. And so we do come in with that mentality of, I'm the problem, I need to be fixed. And I think you're exactly right. There's a real way of pivoting around that and being able to see that actually this thing that's the problem is really going to be the guiding force of moving forward.
I love that. Turning that problem into the purpose.
So let's
kind of shift gears just a little bit, because I know that when we had first communicated, you had actually shared with me in the questionnaire that I asked my guests to complete just so that I can get to know them better, is that you were originally a person who shied away from words like intuition and authenticity, but your own personal journey has helped you see it in a brand new light. So I'd love to learn more about this, like if you don't mind sharing with the community, in terms of what did you used to, I guess, perceive as intuition and authenticity, and how has your journey shifted that for you?
Yeah, it's such a good question. So I feel it's kind of a funny thing for me to look back on now when I think of the ways that I used to respond to those words, because I think that I was a very like a very concrete person, and I liked to talk about things that were measurable and, you know, easy to explain, and anything that was sort of in the field that was a little bit outside of, you know, something that you could research, something that you would learn about in school, it just felt a little bit, you know, kind of like woo-woo for me. Like, it was a little outside of my comfort zone. And I wasn't really sure that it was a real thing. You know, these were just feelings that people were having. And so it's been quite an evolution that now my entire livelihood is about people's feelings. But I think that what really shifted for me is when I was experiencing this anxiety, one of, you know, meditation had been vaguely recommended in for people with anxiety, and I'd overheard people talking about it. And so I thought, okay, I'll go to this Buddhist Sangha that was in Baltimore, and I went to the Learn to Meditate class, and it just really so deeply resonated for me that I kind of dove right in and started taking classes about meditation and also about the teachings in Buddhism. And that was kind of the beginning of that path for me. But I found that once I stayed still long enough, in the practice of meditation and I listened to myself enough, I realized there was something there. There was a sense of intuition. And the word that I use now to talk about it is wisdom. Mm-hmm. Like there is this wisdom that we all have within us. And it was something I really don't know that I had ever heard before in myself, because I was kind of running really fast and I was being very practical and I wasn't really tuning into my body and my mind and my feelings as much. I was being a little bit dismissive of them and thinking of them as like things that got in the way of me getting done what I need to get done.
Right.
And actually sitting with them, I had the experience of feeling them and feeling the realness of intuition and the wisdom that I had within me. And it was a little bit uncomfortable because I was like, this is not something I really believe in, but it was also something I couldn't deny. Like I was feeling it and it was happening for me.
Right, right. And it's not like something that you can really go and Google.
Exactly. And it's funny because, you know, even as I talk about it, I think about like how me 10 years ago would hear the things that I'm saying. And I wonder if I would kind of think, oh, you know, I don't know about all that. But yeah, you know, it's happened. I've experienced it. And now, and it's been an incredible part of my growth in myself. And I see it now in the growth of the clients that I work with. So it feels to me like it can't be denied anymore.
I love that. And I think this is such a good segue into one of the topics that we wanted to talk about, which is how to decide like which voice in your head is the authentic one, which one is the wisdom one, because, you know, I'd love for you to share your perspective and how you came to find your voice.
Yeah. You know, I think that the last thing that I said actually is something that I think about a lot, which is that which cannot be denied is the thing that really rings true for me about our intuition or our wisdom. And I think of our wisdom really as kind of that quiet, persistent voice within us. And perhaps it's telling us something that we know to be true, but it might be a little inconvenient to hear. Right. And so, you know, I really felt like when I was in my social work, my community-based social work career, that was, I sort of had this feeling of like, this isn't how I thought it would be. This doesn't feel how I thought it would feel. There's something that doesn't feel right about this. And that was kind of like persistently going in the background. And I just, it was very inconvenient for me to hear. This is the career that I wanted. This is the career I had decided on. Mm-hmm. And so, I just didn't want to hear it. And I sort of explained it away in lots of ways, but it kind of kept reemerging. And I think that reemergence component is really important, because there is a persistence to that voice, of our wisdom. And it actually reminds me of a type of therapy that I have some training in, which is called internal family systems therapy. And you don't need to know the name of it to understand the concept, which is basically that we have lots of different parts to us. And those parts are often sort of defending us from feeling something that feels uncomfortable. So sometimes we have like an anxiety part, we have a organizational part, we have all of these different parts, but then at the center of all of our parts is the self. And I really think of the self as wisdom. You know, that's the same thing for me. And the way that they talk about the voice of the self in this type of therapy is they say that the self is centered and calm and grounded. Mm-hmm. And so if you hear a voice in your head that says, but what if this all falls apart? What if you do this and everything, you know, goes terribly? That's not calm and centered and grounded, you know? Right. So that's a part that's trying to protect you against something that feels uncomfortable. And it might be a loud and big and obnoxious voice. And so it's hard to ignore, but it's not the voice that really has the whole story and is at the center of who you are and what you want.
I love that. Yeah. And it's so true, right? Because I think we get so afraid of the potential consequences that we allow for that You know, I think in your terminology and mine, it's the ego voice, right? Like the ego voice to come out really strongly. And yet that ego voice can be easily tamed when we start to trust ourselves and to trust the fact that, you know, whatever will happen, and that we have that trust in ourselves to make it all be okay at the end, and that it will be okay at the end. Mm-hmm. So it's a minor inconvenience more than it is like a mountain or a glacier or whatever it is at this point. So totally love that. And, you know, with the meditation and mindfulness mm-hmm. and the Buddhist psychology, I thought it was so interesting too, in the sense that you integrate this into your practice. So mm-hmm. how do you do that exactly? And like, as a Buddhist practitioner, what part of the Buddhist psychology do you, and this is just me being, you know, like very curious, how do you integrate that into your practice? Cause I think it's so cool.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. It's really interesting. I kind of do it differently for each individual client. You know, I have some clients that are also, you know, Buddhist practitioners, or meditation is really central and really important to them. I have clients who have never meditated in their life and they have no interest in meditation. Mm. But a couple of things that feel really central to me about the Buddhist psychology perspective is the belief that we all have inherent wisdom within us. It's not something we need to like go out and find and cultivate. It's something that we need to reveal within us. And it sometimes that sort of means getting some of those other things like our anxiety and our fear and our ego out of the way. But there's a lot of real trust in like the inherent wisdom of the client. Right. And so a lot of my work is asking questions and helping people see patterns that I see, or maybe even just asking about patterns that I think I see, so that they can perhaps reveal what they already know on some level.
Right.
And I do think that the mindfulness component comes in when, you know, we just are living so much of our lives on autopilot. Mm-hmm. And so much of that includes how we deal with our emotions, how we deal with difficult experiences. Sometimes we're bypassers, you know, like, oh, this feels bad. I don't want to feel it. I'm just going to go into my autopilot mode where I don't have to. And with mindfulness, I mean, really what mindfulness is deep awareness of what's happening in the present moment. And so it's being able to say, oh, I'm really feeling hurt right now. And as a result of really feeling hurt, I want to yell. I want to get out of here. I want to, you know, make this other person feel hurt. And when we are deeply aware of what's happening for us internally in the present moment, that's when we're able to actually make changes and to be able to respond differently or do something differently. And it's interesting because it's something that I think is very accessible to a lot of people, no matter what their particular background is. And then there are some pieces that are a little bit more specific, but I would say some of the central components are really just trusting the wisdom of the client, being able to be mindful and aware of the present moment, and also really believing in the importance of welcoming in whatever is happening in this mm-hmm. current moment as information, which is sort of harkens back to what we talked about at the beginning, is that if we are able to notice our experience, notice our body, notice our feeling, there's incredible information about how we're experiencing something, what, you know, how good of a fit this is for us, if it's a relationship, if it's a job, if it's a moment in time. And if we can, without judgment, just be aware and see how we're responding to something, and learn to tolerate the wide spectrum of emotion, and rather than getting all wrapped up in how bad it feels, just being able to see the information there, we actually, you know, are able to use that information to make thoughtful decisions about, you know, the life that we are in and the life that we want to create.
Yeah. And that, you know, I want to kind of follow up with what you were just saying too, is that is kind of like this tie-in from the very beginning of our conversation. Cause I feel like you've done such a great job with tying everything together, right? In terms of your path, how you found your purpose, how you sat with your emotions and, you know, process that and use that as information in terms of what your next steps are. And this is such a critical part, it sounds like, from what you do with your practice, with your clients and teaching them to do that as well. And so do you have an example besides yours? Do you have an example of one, you know, that you can think of that is like a common example that your clients come to you with, right? I think you shared one earlier with I'm feeling anxiety with work. And so if we take that, like what type of information has that generally turned into? Is it something like, for me, when I interpret that, you know, without learning more, but it's like, okay, well, if you're feeling anxiety with work, there's something more to that. Mm-hmm. So it's like kind of helping them find out what that more is. Is that the information that you work with your clients on?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. And, you know, I think that a lot of people that come to me, they come to me with sort of maybe one specific thing like, oh, I'm having anxiety at work, or I'm feeling a little bit insecure in my relationship or in my parenting or something like that. Mm-hmm. And what usually happens is that we find that there's somewhat of a thread. And that, you know, that particular emotion or feeling is perhaps showing up at work in some way, in romantic relationships in some way, in parenting in some way. And the good, you know, sometimes the initial response is it can be a little overwhelming. It's like, oh no, I thought I just had this one tiny little thing and now I see that it's a thread. But the good news is that then when you actually work on the thread, you experience relief and growth in all areas of your life rather than just this one. And I really feel the same way with people sort of coming into their authenticity, because a lot of times something is not feeling exactly right because people are not saying what's true for them. Right. And, you know, I mean, I see this a lot in relationships when people say, oh, well, like something's off, something's not right about this relationship, but maybe they have sort of that people pleasing tendency and they don't want to say like, this thing that you do hurts my feelings, or I'm feeling insecure in this particular way. And so they're really taking care of the other person. And part of being authentic is having the courage to say in a very kind and compassionate way what's true for us.
Right.
And when we start doing that, it becomes kind of addictive in a good way. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, like the world of possibilities kind of opens up to us when we realize that that's actually available to us all the time, is to be able to say in a compassionate and kind way what's true for us. And I think it's really empowering. And so people do come with something sort of specific, but then this experience of being more authentically themselves can kind of ripple through their life, because it feels so good when you start coming into it.
Yeah. And I think the key there too is what you said before, Alicia, is that, you know, you may like, the thread may show itself as a symptom in one part of your life, but there, the thread, like once you start to like tear at that thread, right? Like you like start to pick at it, you start to realize just how deeply wound it is within all parts of our lives. And so it's such like, you know, and it's so funny because I think the common guidance, right, when it comes to career and your personal life is to keep them separate. But I honestly have not seen one person in my 20 years of working. I have not seen one person in corporate that has been successful in being able to literally like categorize work from their personal lives, because I just don't think it's possible. I just don't think, because like it's not like you can't go in as a totally different person. You can put on an act, but you can't go in as a totally different person.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I have a couple of thoughts about that. And one is that, you know, we are a whole person at work as well as at home. And so these things that we sort of categorize perhaps as not not work related, of things like bringing in our like values and all of those kinds of things to our work. Well, we're doing that anyways. It's just whether or not we can actually talk about it.
Right.
But you know, when people talk to me about wanting to better separate work and home, you know, that's a presenting challenge that many clients come to me with, is I say, well, the challenge with that is that you only get one nervous system. So if you got separate nervous systems, maybe we could talk about that.
Yeah.
But you are, you know, wound up and anxious and stressed for 8 hours a day. I mean, first of all, you, especially nowadays, you may not even get in the car and drive home. You may just close your computer and already be at home. But, that's not how our body and our experience works, is that we can just say, okay, I'm in a different environment. Therefore I can shut down all of the feelings and experiences that I've had today. I mean, our nervous system is specifically conditioned not to do that. It's to say, you know, oh, this is a stressful environment. We have to keep all of our defenses up because we're feeling really stressed. It's not designed to just turn on a dime. Yep. And so I think we're asking it to do something that it's really not designed to do. And sure, it would be easy if that was possible. And I think that's kind of why that's a lot of the corporate guidance is like, well, this would sure be convenient if you could do this. So we're just going to act like this is a reasonable expectation, when maybe it's really not the way we're built.
Yeah. And I mean, you've like hit so many gems today. It's like that convenience factor, right? Like that's what our society is built on. Let's just make it convenient for those who have to manage or for those who are around us. It's all about convenience. But the problem is that when you're like, convenience, I don't know. I don't know enough to really say what it really is, but I think that this concept of convenience at a certain level requires conformity. And when we require conformity, I think that just goes against, it's like everything anti-authentic.
Yes. I think that's a really, really great point. And I also think that, you know, when we are encouraging conformity and asking people to show up in a very specific way that's not healthy or even possible for everybody, that's where a lot of these messages of there's something wrong with me come from. Is that that's the subtle, I mean, maybe not so subtle implication of, okay, you should separate, you know, work and home. And it's like, oh, well, I can't do that. There must be something wrong with me.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, you leave your emotions at the door. Well, that might be nice for somebody to say, but not everybody can do that. And that's something that, you know, I think, I think corporate has just, you're supposed to go into this very sterile place and be a sterile person. And you know, even this morning I was thinking like, oh, we're just, there's this concept that like all employees are supposed to act as robots. Well, you know, with the way that AI is going, maybe, but then at the end of the day, like they're still humans and, you know, we have to account for humans in some way, shape or form. And so, you know, there are going to be differences. And I think that that's something that organizations today haven't truly accounted for, in order for them to really leverage a lot of the talents, a lot of different beliefs, and, you know, all the other good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also just think it's a real missed opportunity, because there's so much wisdom in our emotions. And they, you know, and going back to that idea that like emotions are information, if we could come into a high stress, you know, business meeting and be able to tune into ourselves enough to say, ooh, that decision doesn't feel right for me. Like something feels really, whatever it might be, something feels really unsafe about this decision. Something feels like it's not morally appropriate. Like something's feeling wrong to me about this decision. That's really, all of that stuff comes from our emotions. Yeah. And I think there's smart people that are missing out on, part of their wisdom at work, because emotions just feel scary to a lot of workplaces. They're not easy to control. They're not easy to, you know, people are very uncomfortable with dealing with other people's emotions.
Oh my gosh.
And
yes.
So it just feels scary. And they're like, well, let's just keep it out of here.
Yeah.
And I think they're missing a lot of, I mean, I keep using this word, but a lot of wisdom that potentially people could be bringing in with them.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I think people like to also, when they feel that way, I feel like they like to like talk themselves out of it verbally and with others and talk others out of it too. So it's actually really interesting. It's like, you know, if I had the resources to do like this grand study, I think that would definitely be one of the subjects that I would cover in terms of like, how do people mask their intuition at work so that they can like tune out what they know to be true so that they convince themselves of what isn't true, but to be true.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it's like, I mean, you mentioned self-trust earlier, and that's such a critical part of the way that I work with clients in general, is kind of getting them back in touch with that piece. But we can become so estranged from our sense of trusting ourselves when we do this, when we ignore that intuition over and over again, or have somebody tell us, no, that's not right. That's not how you feel. And so I think that when people come out of, for example, toxic work environments, I always say like the central thing we're working on is getting you to trust yourself again, because you've been sort of trying to ignore that part of yourself that's saying, this is not good, this is not right, for a long time. And we need to remember the wisdom there and sort of reconnect.
Yeah, I totally agree. This, we have come to like towards the end of our time, Alicia, and I could probably continue this conversation for another half an hour. So perhaps you'll consider joining us again at a later point. I thank you so much for joining me today. I'd love for you to share with the audience how they can get to know you better, how they can work with you, where do they reach out to you. You know, I think that you had provided your website, and so we'll include that in the, in the show notes. But I think you also had a free, meditation that you wanted to share with everybody too, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. If you go to my website, the top banner, on my website has, if you sign up for my newsletters, which I promise I only send interesting newsletters, I hate crappy emails. If you sign up for that, you get access to a free meditation that I do, just about sort of being in touch with yourself, being able to, it sort of walks you through the experience of feeling an intense emotion, and listening to your body and listening to the information that's in that emotional experience. And that's at goldfinchwellness.com.
That's awesome. And so thank you again, Alicia, for joining us. And for our listeners today, if you have found value in this episode, if you have found Alicia's wisdom to be as truly enlightening as I have, please rate and share and like and subscribe and do all the good things so that we can start to expand our impact, to expand the message to more individuals who are looking for that light at the end of the tunnel, to know that they're not wrong, that they just have a lot of information that needs to be processed. And so until next time, I'll talk to you soon. Bye, everybody.